for the District of Columbia Circuit, Armand Strahan, and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-5242, National Institute of Military Justice Appellate versus the
Please take the point.
Good morning. May it please the court, Raj Day, on behalf of the appellant, National Institute of Military Justice, I would like to please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This appeal raises a single issue, whether communications between officials at the Department of Defense and a select group of private individuals completely outside of the government should be shielded from public disclosure as inter or intra-agency documents protected under FOIA Exemption 5. The individuals in question had no lawful government status at all. They were not members of a public commission. They were not independent contractors. They were not even designated as special government employees. If the inter or intra-agency requirement is to maintain any meaningful content at all, it must, at a minimum, require that individuals protected have some legally conferred government status to bring them within the fold of government. Allowing
where do you,
yes, Your Honor.
I mean, I could see how starting fresh with the statutory language, one could conclude that. But in the interpretations, both by the Supreme Court and us, what would take you there?
Your Honor, the only decision of the Supreme Court to address this first condition of Exemption 5, the inter-interagency requirement, is the Klamath decision.
And it makes clear that they're serious about interagency and intra-agency aren't meaningless.
That's correct, Your Honor. And we would submit that, at a minimum, if it's not to become meaningless, become a purely conclusory term, there has to be some minimal legal reason why members of the public are otherwise considered within the fold of government. In other words,
I assume the government's answer to that is that the agency has asked for their views.
Yes, Your Honor. We would submit that simply cannot be the test. That's not the way our government works. In order to bring individuals within the government, either as advisors, whether they're unpaid or temporary, there are set procedures in place. One could be an unpaid consultant pursuant to the statutory and regulatory framework for procuring advisory services. One could even be a special government employee and be designated as such and be subject to the requisite conflicts requirements. But our government does not allow individual government officers, by discretionary fiat, just to reach out and tap on the shoulder.
Well, let's slow down. It does allow them to do it. The question is, how do you classify the results of what they do?
Correct, Your Honor, and have them treated as the equivalent of agency personnel. So in other words, this is not a question of whether officers of the government can consult, as a matter of fact, with members of the public. It's a question of how those consultations are to be treated, whether they are to be treated as the equivalent of agency consultations. Getting back to Your Honor's question about the precedent of this circuit, the Klamath decision in footnote 4 did cast doubt on whether two prior precedents, the Ryan decision and the public citizen decision, are still valid precedent. But the rule that we are proposing...
You think that footnote casts doubt on it?
The court suggested that even if individuals outside the government could be considered within the intra-agency exception,
suggests to me that it hasn't addressed the question.
It did not. Certainly, the court certainly did not affirm that individuals outside the government could ever be considered part of the interagency exception. But the court went on to say that even if we were to recognize the exception, so-called consultant corollary, that several lower courts have recognized, these two decisions would seem to fall outside even the typical example of the paid consultant. However, even the rule that we are suggesting here today would encompass those two decisions. All we're suggesting is that there's some legal status to consider individuals who are consulted part of the government writ large. So in Ryan, the communications were between sitting senators and the attorney general.
Do you see anything in Ryan that suggests the court relied on that, on the fact that they were senators?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, I think part of the underlying rationale of the Klamath decision was that prior to that point, courts had in large part effectively read out of the statute the interagency requirement and had effectively turned it into a purely conclusory term by relying on the role that the documents played in the agency's deliberative process, which is the second step of the analysis. And that is precisely the sort of analysis that the court went through in Ryan. It effectively focused on the second step of the analysis, which is the same mode of analysis the panel in Formaldehyde Institute and Public Citizen went through, which
I
are
guess
the two.
It's clear in Klamath, isn't it, that the court's drawing a divide between interested parties and consultants. And your object is to throw a lot of formalities around consultant. But I didn't see anything in Klamath, to be sure it wasn't directly before them, anything in Klamath that requires a bunch of formalities to be thrown around the word.
Your Honor, I would submit, the way our government works, it works as an initial matter, works on formalities. So in other words, it's not the case that
one of its problems, perhaps.
Individuals can simply be tapped as members of the public and be brought into government without anything more. But beyond that, there are specific procedures in place to cut through some of the formalities, whether it's designation as a special
alternative formalities.
That's correct. But I would say legal formalities, which is the key point for us. So in other words, there has to be some legal status as a bright line. Otherwise, there is no content to the intra-agency requirement.
Let me ask you about this. There's one sentence in Ryan that I've been trying to understand. The court says, when the record at issue here, quote, is submitted by outside consultants as part of the deliberative process, and it was solicited by the agency, we find it entirely reasonable that this is an intra-agency. Now, what do we do about that sentence?
Your Honor, I would suggest that what we are attempting to do here is to provide some content to what the label consultant means.
Yeah, but this decision is, unless this decision was overruled by Klamath, this is a pretty clear description of this case. When the agency record is submitted by an outside consultant, which is what happened here, as part of the deliberative process, and it was solicited by the agency, which is what happened here, then it's intra-agency. Now, that's this case.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, just as an initial matter, that clearly the circumstances of Ryan, the factual circumstances, are distinguishable in that they were government, everyone involved was a
government. Well, that's why I asked you whether or not there's anything in Ryan that suggests the fact that they were senators is significant. I couldn't find anything.
Your Honor, I think, if focusing on the quote that you put forward now, if documents are submitted by consultants, what we are suggesting is, in order to be considered a consultant, there has to be something behind that. So the court didn't have to address that in Ryan, precisely because of the factual circumstances.
Because they were senators.
Correct. And in fact, the circuit has found that communications just between Congress and the executive branch, if they were the other way, in other words, between going from the executive branch to Congress, would not necessarily count as intra-agency, because they would not be part of an agency's deliberations. It was critical to the court in Ryan that they were part of the Department of Justice's deliberations.
But that's not in contest here.
That's correct. That's not in contest. But to that extent, it is relevant that the Department of Justice was the agency and the documents were coming from Congress. But our rule, Your Honor, would not even put Ryan in any doubt. We are suggesting that what is underlying a lot of the prior decisions of this circuit, and frankly the court's direction in Klamath, is that there has to be some legal basis to dividing folks who are just members of the public from folks who should be considered consultants. So in other words, just because there is a consultant exception, there has been no meaningful content put behind what that should mean.
Well, the language in Ryan suggests solicitation as the key distinction.
And I would suggest, Your Honor, that as a matter of course, a solicitation certainly should be a necessary but not sufficient condition. In other words, there is, for example, a general statutory prohibition on executive branch officials accepting voluntary services from members of the public. This is codified at 31 U.S.C. 1342. So solicitation presupposes that there's some statutory or regulatory authorization to get the even voluntary services from advisory consultants. Without such authorization, you have to follow the regular procedures, whether it's to going through the federal acquisition regulations, whether it's going through appointment as a special government employee under 18 U.S.C. 202, which accounts for temporary and even unpaid advisors, precisely the sort of situation we're dealing with here.
Well, see, the question we face, we have an antecedent question, at least this court does, which is whether we're free, based on our precedent, given our case law, to even even explore that, right? That's the problem we're facing.
I think you are, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I would submit that precisely for the reasons I mentioned with respect to Ryan and with respect to public citizen.
Let me ask you a policy question.
Sure.
Our cases rest on the, our pre-Klamath cases, they rest on by the way, that sentence I quoted you from Ryan?
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, we cited that after, we quoted that again after Klamath.
Is this in the Judicial Watch case, Your Honor? I would note that this court in Judicial Watch specifically actually did focus on the fact that the National Energy Policy Development Group, which was the body at issue in that case, was comprised entirely of federal officials.
Federal employees. Okay, so here's my policy question. All of our cases rest on the proposition that A, it's good for government to solicit this kind of advice, and B, without confidentiality, you won't get it. Right?
I would agree with both of those propositions,
okay.
Right, yes.
So what do you think, suppose we felt free to agree with you about this. Do you think that would limit the ability of government to enlist this kind of advice on key questions of public policy?
No, Your Honor. All we're suggesting is that it cannot be purely by the discretionary fiat of any individual.
Well, that wasn't my question. My question is, if you're right that these are not intra-agency,
yes,
because there's no formal relationship, do you think people like those whose views were solicited here are likely to give the government their views if they think that they're likely to become public?
Your Honor, all that would be required as a policy matter is to designate these individuals special government employees, which would have some very minimal ethics and disclosure requirements. So,
What would that do to whether or not their advice is confidential?
If that were the case, if that rubric were employed, then they could be considered intra-agency documents, and then the only question would be, were they part of the deliberative process for the agency? So in other words, all we're suggesting is that individuals who are out in the public shouldn't have an expectation.
What are the consequences for the individual who's designated a special employee? I take it these are people who are not paid, right? They're just.
They can be, but they can also be unpaid and temporary.
Do they assume any other obligations by virtue of being a special government employee?
Very minimal. The federal bribery statutes, for example, will apply to them. Certain lobbying statutes, in other words, after a year after the service, they cannot lobby the government on the specific matter with which they were which they were engaged.
Let's think about that.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that, in other words, after having, under your scenario, after having responded to a request for advice and gone through the procedure that you advocate as a precondition, then they wouldn't be able to lobby, you say. Does that?
Yes, Your Honor. But
does that cover any advocacy or what?
No, Your Honor, it's just on the specific matter for which they were engaged.
Well, okay, it's pretty broad, regulations relating to custody.
I would suggest that this is, in fact, a very practical way to address the court's concerns in Klamath about conflicts.
I'm trying to figure out what lobbying encompasses in this context.
I think the specific terms of the statute, which is 18 U.S.C. 202 and subsequent parts, address advocacy in the context of the specific matter for which the individual is retained. I don't have the statutory language in front of me, but it's a one-year ban on the specific issue.
So it's advocacy without regard to representing a particular interest in the narrow sense of the word interest, as opposed to the broad sense of being interested.
That's correct. And in fact, the court's guidance in Klamath would suggest, you know, an even broader interest analysis. Frankly, the court didn't provide any substance as to what self-interest should mean. And if this court doesn't apply a clear rule, we would suggest that courts generally are going to be dragged into very messy entanglements as to what constitutes self-interest. Is it purely a pecuniary interest? What about an ideological self-interest? These are all the sorts of questions that will have to be figured out by courts on an ad hoc basis if we don't take advantage of the system that's already set up for bringing folks within the government. I see that my time.
Yes, I really just want to make sure of this. So Professor X responds to a request, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And on your scenario, Professor X goes through these hoops. And then Professor X, 6 months later, wants to file a statement with the department, perhaps it's broader than the department, on the same issue. It's had new thoughts.
In the same matter, Your Honor.
Okay. Crime.
They are certainly prohibited by federal ethics guidelines from doing so. But we would submit that that is appropriate. I see that my time has expired.
Wait, we're not done. So if you're designated as a special employee, is that public, that you are one?
Yes, Your Honor. There must be public disclosure forms.
Okay. Well, since you agree that, I mean, at least I think you said you agree that it's in everybody's interest to facilitate this kind of consultation, right? That's good for government policymaking.
In a lawful manner, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Don't you think there may be a significant number of people out there who would be pleased to provide their views but may not want to if the public knows they're giving their views?
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor, that is not good public policy to allow individual government officers to selectively receive input
from
other individuals.
Well, let's take this case for example. Let's take these commissions. These commissions are very controversial. These commissions for trying alleged terrorists, right? And people feel very strongly about it out there, and it's a highly sensitive political issue. And there may have been people on this list who were consulted who would not want to have consulted this administration if the public had known about it, but were happy to give their views if it wasn't known. Now, wouldn't that be useful to allow an administration to reach out to people who might otherwise be, say, politically hostile, but willing to work, willing to give their views under, if it's confidential?
I would suggest, Your
Honor,
if we're talking
idea?
Just about the identities of the individuals,
yeah.
Clearly the system we have in place now does not protect their identities, given that we're standing here in FOIA litigation with their identities.
Well, that's a good point.
And so if we're talking about content, those protections still would apply if they were part of the deliberative process.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I guess it's not clear, though, that FOIA required disclosure of the identities. It was disclosed, but
yeah, did it?
At least I haven't focused on
right.
Whether FOIA required the disclosure.
You know, I think that's a question that's litigated in a case-by-case basis. We would suggest that at a minimum.
Well, I know.
Yes, there is no.
Take your eye from your position.
There is no clear statutory requirement under FOIA that individuals be named. However, there has to be a certain specificity in the designation
that
generally requires the names.
All right, we'll give you
I'll
some
I'll take
time.
A seat. Thank you.
Good morning. Mr. Day has spent, I would say, his entire argument talking about the formalities, the procedures that must be in place in order for a consultant, paid or unpaid, to provide the advice and have those communications fall under the deliberative process privilege. This argument was not made below. There's no argument about 18 U.S.C., no argument whatsoever. I would like to point out, however, that these individuals, we do not believe it's necessary. We do not believe that it's an alternative formality, that it's required. But indeed, these individuals did go through the process. It was not an issue below. It never came up. It's offered it the first time in the reply brief. So I'd like to make that point, Your Honors.
Wait, are you suggesting that these people were special government employees?
Exactly, Your Honor. It's not in the record,
oh.
However. It's not in the record, but they did go through the process. That's my understanding.
But you agree that we have to decide this case without knowing that?
Exactly, Your Honor. And I'd like to, again, point out it was raised for the first time in the reply. Now, in terms of...
Why didn't the government raise that in defending this case?
Excuse me?
Why didn't the government raise that in defending this case?
Why didn't?
Yeah.
Because it didn't appear at the time to be an issue. These individuals were high-ranking, former high-ranking government employees. This is, as you indicated from your...
Ernie Meltzer was a former high-ranking government employee?
The individuals that are involved were former high-ranking government employees who obviously...
Bernard Meltzer?
Expertise, excuse me?
Bernard Meltzer?
Or advisors who were experts in the military commission process. There wasn't any question that these people were not the private citizens that appellant now claims
okay,
that
well,
they are.
Okay, well, the point is we don't know that, right? And you agree that
yes,
that's not a fact in this case.
Exactly,
our resolution of this case cannot turn on that.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Our resolution of this case has to turn on whether this advice was intra-agency.
Exactly,
okay,
Your Honor.
Go ahead. So go ahead.
But as you pointed out, Your Honor, in the Ryan case, it says that if it's information that is provided from outside consultants that it was sought and it's part of the deliberative process, then that is all that is required for it
to be. But isn't the Ryan case, isn't the reasoning of the Ryan case completely undermined by Klamath?
Completely what?
Undermined by Klamath. Klamath, whatever you call it. I mean, Ryan said... let me just focus you on the language, on what I'm talking about. Ryan says that Congress did not intend intra-agency to be a rigid term, but rather to include any agency document that is part of the deliberative process. Isn't that completely rejected by Klamath, that reasoning?
What Klamath does is it sets the limit on consultant
No, just stick
documents.
With this. Just stick with this language. Ryan says Congress did not intend intra-agency to be a rigid term. And Klamath says intra-agency must be given independent meaning.
However, Klamath also says at page 10 that it cites Judge Scalia's dissent in Julian, and it says that it's textually possible to receive a memo from one with a governmentally conferred capacity that is not part of the government. So
with a governmentally, but I think he was referring to independent consultants in that case.
Outside consultants.
Outside consultants, and the question is, are these people outside consultants? They aren't paid. They have no formal relationship with the government.
Being paid does not require a formal relationship. You don't
have
to be paid.
Klamath, the court talks about, all through Klamath, the court says, refers to them as independent contractors. It even refers to them several times as being, quote, paid.
It does refer to them as being paid, but that is only that's the underlying predicate, that you have a spectrum. You have the accepted paid consultant whose communications are obviously protected under the deliberative process privilege, the consultant corollary, as it's called, and then you have the limit that was imposed by Klamath, and that is you cannot have consultants with private interests that are adverse to interests of others. So you have the spectrum. You have the paid consultants, and then you have the tribes, the consultants with an interest, and then you have Ryan and public interest in between, and you have our case, which is in between. So
right. Therefore what?
Therefore,
I mean,
if they're paid consultants, okay, they're clearly covered.
I agree with that.
And if they have an interest, again,
then they're not.
They're not. And
right.
Our case falls in between that.
Right.
Okay. And the only thing that, again, for the first time in the appellate court here, a plaintiff claims that there may be interest, and that's why they go into this conflicts of interest argument that these individuals may have had interest. There is no question that this is a group of individuals who have hundreds of years of specific experience in this field. They are like sages. Their wisdom was sought after. And as you pointed out, the Ryan case and the discussion that it's good government. The sentence after the sentence you quoted, Judge Tatel, says, after the discussion of if it's submitted and it's solicited, it says, this common sense interpretation of intra-agency to accommodate the realities of the typical agency deliberation process has been consistently followed by the courts.
Yeah, and the question
it's a common
is whether,
sense way of looking at
it. And the question is whether, even if you're completely correct, that that's a common sense approach to government, the question for us is, are we free to rely on that given Klamath, which tells us that we now have to give content to the word intra-agency, which is defined as within? That's the question.
Well, you have, as you pointed out in the Judicial Watch case, you have already determined that Klamath has not.
Well, but that case only involved government employees.
Similar to Ryan, it really didn't make any difference. The analysis is still the same.
No, but Judicial Watch could not have addressed the question before us here, that is the role of an outsider, because outsiders weren't involved in that case.
Well,
sure, it cited the language, but that has nothing to do with the holding of the case.
Well, the National Environmental Policy Group was not an agency of the government. So they were, in fact, outsiders. They may indeed have a government affiliation, but they were not an agency under the FOIA, and that was made clear in that case.
Can you think, are there any circumstances, in your view, under which the government soliciting the views of an outsider would not be covered by this exemption? In other words, is it the government's view that whenever an agency asks a citizen to supply that person's views on an issue of public policy, that it's not releasable under FOIA? Are there any limits to it?
The limits would be whether the private citizen that
other
was
than
asked.
Klamath. Other than Klamath.
Had an expertise.
Had an expertise?
Expertise. If the consultant had something to bring into the deliberative process, and that's what we have here. We don't have just private citizens.
Aren't you also presupposing some solicitation by the government?
Yes. Yes.
So if these same people had submitted their own views without being asked, they wouldn't be protected?
In this case, that's probably true.
But suppose.
But that's not the case here.
I know. That's why it's a hypothetical. I'm trying to find out what the parameters are of your position here.
Well, the parameters.
Where are you drawing line? So your view is that there has to be a solicitation. Well, isn't it? I mean, suppose these people had submitted their views and they had been just as useful in the deliberative process, that the agency had considered them and found them helpful. Wouldn't it be just as discouraging to the deliberative process to make these public?
Your Honor, these individuals were asked.
I know, I'm exploring
and
with you the question.
And there were others that were not asked.
I'm exploring with you the question of what would happen if they had not been asked but had submitted their views.
In that case, in the context of this case, they were indeed released. We are only talking about 19 documents that were not released, over 1,000 pages of documents.
Is that
individuals?
I wasn't aware of that principle in FOIA cases.
I'm sorry?
I wasn't aware that that was a principle through which we judge FOIA cases, that it doesn't involve too many documents, therefore it's okay to keep them confidential.
I'm sorry. If I misspoke. I just meant that there were other documents that came from other people with expertise they were not withheld.
I know. And what I'm trying to understand is why the government draws that distinction. If your purpose is to protect and facilitate the deliberative process, right? What difference should it make that the documents were solicited versus views that were not solicited if they both played a role in the deliberative process?
Well, that's what the case law requires. You want to ensure that the individuals that provide the information are comments are protected, as you have previously indicated. Whether or not under the law it can, private citizens' comments can be protected when they're not solicited, that's, I understand the issue you're raising. I don't know what to say. It's not the case here. Unless I'm misunderstanding it, I'm sorry.
Let me just see if I can focus on a slightly different thing. A key, not the only key issue between the parties here, is where the burden of showing the absence of a claimant-type interest lies. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, the appellant says this got to be the SGE-type screening.
Mm-hmm.
And you say what exactly? In the absence of some reason to believe that they are interested in that forbidden sense, there's no particular reason to think they are.
Well, if I could just focus on the deliberative process privilege itself, what we have is documents that have been submitted by outside experts, whether they were advisors in military commissions or former high-ranking individuals. They were asked. They provided it during the process. Therefore, it is part of the deliberative process.
Yeah, there's no dispute here about the deliberative process aspect of it. The only issue is the interagency mm-hmm. aspect. And the contention of the appellant is that various formalities provide assurance about absence of the claimant-type interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, one answer you can give is that in this case that only really appeared in the reply brief.
Mm-hmm.
But putting that answer aside, it's still an issue. Potential issue, at any rate.
Well, it's a potential issue, but it wasn't raised below.
Suppose it had been raised below.
Actually, the appellant did indicate that these were unique individuals, and that they did. It did not represent that they had personal interests, and they made that representation.
They're saying it affirmatively mm-hmm. took that out of the case.
Let me ask you. Let me ask you this. What's the, you agree, you must. I mean, claimant requires that we give meaning to the word intra-agency, right? Regardless of what.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you agree that intra-agency is defined as within, right?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me, in the crispest way you can, how you would explain why these documents are intra-agency.
Oh.
And you can't just rely, let me make it harder for you. You can't just say they're part of the deliberative process, right? Because claimant says that's not enough.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's the crisp answer to that question?
There were four declarations.
Uh-huh.
One of them is at R18. It's not in the joint appendix, but the others are in the joint appendix.
Uh-huh.
They all indicate that the General Counsel or DOD sought the advice of these former high-ranking officials and experts in the field,
uh-huh.
that that they were promised confidentiality, at least three of the four indicate that they are identified. They are identified by Secretary Rumsfeld and in the Vaughan Index as to who they are, whether they're the Secretary of Air Force or the Director of the CIA and FBI. They are identified as experts in the field.
What makes them intra-agency is that the Secretary asked for their views.
Yes.
That's it.
That they submitted
that
it during
them,
the administration.
That makes them within the agency.
Yeah, well, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's part of
right.
it anyway.
Well, wait, what else is it?
They were deliberative process material. It was, they were sought after,
mean?
And they were experts.
they were experts. Suppose, suppose the secretary had consulted, included in the list, some journalists. Would they not be protected?
If they were had written extensively on military commissions.
I'm sure, but why does that? Why does any of these factors relate to whether it's intra-agency or not? That's what I'm trying. I don't understand that. I understand your point that, okay, they were asked, mm-hmm. so that makes them intra-agency. But I don't understand, why does it make them intra-agency because they're experts?
If they had a governmentally conferred capacity, if they were functioning in the same way as an employee, then there is the what has been designated okay. the consultant corollary.
All right, let's try it this way. Give me an example of someone who the secretary could ask, but it wouldn't be covered by the deliberative process privilege.
His wife? I mean.
Okay. Anything else?
Anything else?
Yeah. Anyone else?
The only other thing I'd like to say is that this.
No. Anything else in answer to my question?
Your Honor, it's difficult for me to speculate as to that. I think that in our position is that they have the expertise.
But your point is, the reason I'm asking this is your point is that it's not enough to be asked, correct? Is that the government's position?
In a future case, I think each case has to be decided by its own
but
facts.
But we have to write an opinion here.
In this
explaining
particular
what the law is that governs this case.
In this particular
and
case.
And I want to know from the government whether or not it's sufficient to be covered by the deliberative process to be asked, or whether more is required, and if so, what that is.
If you were to follow your precedent in Judicial Watch and in Ryan, you do not have to find anything more than it was submitted by an outside consultant and it was solicited.
So we ignore Klamath?
Klamath recognized that by indicating uh-huh. that it recognized the consultant corollary, the governmentally conferred capacity, that the text does not prohibit this kind of analysis. Now, Judicial Watch was 4 years after Klamath.
Correct.
So, and
but in
there
Judicial
have been
Watch,
many cases since that.
That's the former president case, right?
No, Judicial Watch is DOE. It has to do with the National Environmental Policy Group.
Okay.
Where is it in the record that we can find the plaintiffs affirmatively putting to one side any claim?
If you give me a moment, I'll sit down. It's
okay.
in the R40.
Thank you.
It's in the record in R40.
It's not in the joint appendix?
No.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
These were representations okay. that were made below.
Somewhere in R40?
R40, that is their opposition, and then there's a reply. I can check it, but.
Okay. Unless you correct, I'll assume it's R40.
All right.
No, I'm done.
Mr. Day,
I'd just like to make three quick points to address what opposing counsel suggested here. On the conflict point, I would just like to say that our position does not rest on whether or not the individuals in this particular case have a conflict of interest. So in other words, we are not suggesting that they do, nor is the rule of law that we are suggesting this court adopt dependent on whether these particular individuals had a conflict. Secondly, appellant has below and here consistently argued that the individuals in question are simply members of the public. There's no new claim being made here. We've always relied on Klamath and on the plain meaning of the statutory language. And third, I think as the government's argument today has made clear, the government has offered no limiting principle to what intra-agency should mean, other than solicited by the government and somebody with expertise. That literally means, I would take it, anybody that a government officer consults with, and practically that could include any former government official who presumably has some expertise in their former area of employment, would be considered for life basically the equivalent of agency personnel for public disclosure purposes.
You don't, though, put any stress on whether a consultant is paid.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think that if a consultant is paid, that presumes that there has to be some legal status, since certainly money can't flow out of the Treasury to
as long as they're vetted without being paid.
At a minimum, there has to be some legal status, paid or unpaid. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. Unless there's further questions. Thank you.
Do you have the page sign?
If I could say, I'm sure I can find it, but if it's not in 40, it's in R48. That's the reply.
Thank you.